When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV+. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 5, titled Goldilocks. Aaron, was this episode a little too cold, a little too hot, or just right for you?
I was thinking about what to say about this podcast, this episode on the podcast, and I think I've come up with, this is the best worst episode of For All Mankind I've ever seen. Let me explain. I like everything they're doing with the character beats of all the established characters that I actually care about, and I think that is executing on an extremely high level, and it's in stark contrast with the Miles and Sams and Ilyas of the world, which I think is almost stupid, and how their plot, I think it seems like... We got feedback to suggest maybe we're alone on this, but like I find a lot of the situations they're trying to maneuver on Mars, the Lower Decks people, to be just preposterous. You know, we talked about like, you know, we're going to criticize last week's episode heavier if Miles and Sam don't come back to the base met with an armed escort for Steve, you know, and obviously that didn't happen. Obviously, that's not a problem. Miles has had no problem establishing the supply chain under Ilyas. I thought the way Ilyas found it is preposterous, was stupid.
Yep.
But like, is that bringing? But all the other, like, I really like the geopolitics. I really like how succinctly this show is kind of hinting at the problems that the American politics have. And, you know, even in this kind of more utopian, better world, that there's still, you know, shit politicians and shitty politics and clumsy maneuvers on the international stage. And I like that. I just the thing I want to connect with is the worker struggle on Mars. And I just feel like they're just not servicing that well at all. But yeah, Danny versus Ed. Oh, my God. Amazing. Yeah. Dev and Kelly and Alaida, I thought was amazing. It's just, whew. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I don't know why we have to sacrifice believability for drama here, because I think there's just as much drama to mine out of getting a phone call to his wife, to Lee's wife, as there is to getting her onto the station, which... to me seems like just a complete non-starter, and Lee should know that, right? Like, maybe he thinks that, you know, like you said, the Americans have some kind of crazy freedom going on there and anybody can come up to Mars, but it doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And then, yeah, not having at least a mention of, hey, we really got away with something there, huh? Taking that rover out to save you. You owe us, buddy. We should have been arrested when we got back. I don't know why we weren't. Yeah, man, I that's a bridge too far for me in a lot of ways. That said, I think, yeah, the stuff that they're doing character-wise is pretty outstanding. I got choked up in a couple of scenes with, you know, Kelly watching old videos of Karen, and even Dev scenes. You know, Dev, primed to not like, to not trust, and yet I see him in so much pain over the decisions that he's made in the past and the things that have happened to him. And I'm like, can't help but feel for the guy, but I don't know, man. They're walking this tightrope right now of me enjoying the drama and the character beats just enough to go along with the bullshit that they're pulling on the plot side. And that doesn't feel like For All Mankind of previous seasons to me.
Yeah, and I hope it's because they're biting off more than they can chew. There's just way too many things they're trying to get into the commentary, and they're also trying to set up next season and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, man, because like it seems certain that at least Miles and Sam are going to be a core of like new characters that go forward. I don't know why you spend this much time on them, but it's just like, oh my God, to the extent that I'm going to have to care about these people even more in the future, because they're going to be the next generation. They're going to be season five core backbone for all mankind. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more than just like what feels like cardboard cutouts that say, you know, very like they just like that. Oh, it's I thought when Sam coming in to talk about her being torn between getting to do her spacewalk versus, you know, her proletariat ennui was some of the worst written dialogue I've ever seen and delivered with no conviction. And it's just, oh, man. And that's the problem. Like I kind of felt the same way about Dev. It's like, am I really invested in this guy like for a long term? And his character really clicked into place this episode. I'm like, this explains this very weird guy and his react. Yeah. And that's the other thing is like, For All Mankind's always been like a sneaky emotional show. I never think of it as like being a tearjerker or something, but I'll be damned if like every season there it hasn't gotten the waterworks going at least once or twice, and it certainly did for me. But yeah, I guess the main sequence of the characters that are established and that stuff is all working really well, so it's not a fatal problem. And I've seen good shows go through rough patches before in terms of
much worse ones.
Justified, Boardwalk Empire, hell, even Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul have gone through like several episode stretches where I'm like, I'm not sure if I agree with where this is going, but
gotcha.
Yeah, it does seem like they are coloring outside the lines a bit more than I've seen in previous seasons.
Yeah, I think thematically the stuff they're doing is interesting. It's almost a return to some of their earlier stuff in For All Mankind with, you know, the space program's toll on families. I'm finding that stuff pretty compelling, how it's both a positive and a negative on the people whose lives it touches. And yeah, I can't tell if they've said everything they're going to say on that just because, like, that's the nature of it. Or if they're trying to get to some thesis on what should we be doing with people who need to be in these very important and mission critical positions, but also have families and like other responsibilities. Do we come down on them and say, you can't have those? Do we try and make accommodations for those people? Like, I don't know where the show is going with it, but I'm definitely curious to see.
Feels like it's going the NCC 1701D. Fucking bring the families, man.
I'm kind of excited to see the kids go into space.
I want to see Commander Poole getting hit by a snowball coming out of the holodeck, you know, because the kids are in there playing.
Look, it wouldn't be the first time this kid was in space.
True. He was in a slightly more sophisticated life support system the previous time, but
He had a really good suit, but he was on Mars.
He's wearing his Mars utility suit. I think that you're right that the pull between duty, like in its classic sense, you know, in the For All Mankind sense, you know, to making the world a better place, to discovery, to advancement of humanity as a whole, versus your obligations to individual humans, your family, your friends, your social circles. I thought that stuff was a really interesting meditation, and like all the different motivations people can have, like money versus, you know, like the more high-minded, you know, NASA kind of ideals of exploration and things like that. I thought it was really interesting stuff that I, you know, wrestle with. It's like, as a father, you know, do I take this better job halfway across the country and, you know, uproot my kid's schedule? Or maybe he goes a couple months in a row without seeing me? Or do I, you know, turn that down to be more available, but then have less resources to provide? Like those, like I said, that stuff seems like it's incredibly nuanced. And like I said, it's none of these issues I think are fatal. It's just like I'm really rolling my eyes pretty hard through some of the Milosh and Ilya stuff, and I think they need to course correct on that. But I don't know, maybe Ilya just poisoned Miles and I'm not gonna have to worry about it.
We'll see. All right. Maybe we should get into the recap here.
Yeah, let's do it. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to More for All Mankind.
We start off on July 2nd, 2003. The Payne Space Telescope picks up a new asteroid near Mars. NASA, Helios, the Soviets, and even the news react to the discovery that there's a shitload of iridium in it, worth $20 trillion. And the window to grab it is closing.
So I think we've seen this Payne Telescope before. I think that they were servicing it on a mission in season 3. It's interesting because this looks like the James Webb Space Telescope, but it is not functioning or acting anything like the James Webb Space Telescope. It doesn't like it's at a Lagrange point. It doesn't seem like it's scanning deep. Like you would never point the joint James Webb at like a planet or like the source of that intense light, you know? It's another one. It's like, I wonder, it's like, you know, I felt like they were a little more careful about adapting NASA projects and you know, having them be like accelerated in time, but like not, you know, still kind of true to their purpose and stuff. I thought about those Sea Dragon missiles that were so cool. But it's the reminder, this is it's not called the James Webb because this is named after Thomas Paine, the director of NASA that was exploded in an airline disaster. He was the director of NASA for the Republican administrations, Nixon and Reagan. So he got the Molly Cobb treatment with the naming of this telescope.
Nice.
What do you know about iridium?
Nothing.
I did some research because I had some time this morning. First of all, this is a Jovian Trojan that got perturbed out of its orbit. And apparently there's a whole class of asteroids that are to share the orbit of Jupiter. But Jupiter being so big and powerful, it has pushed all of those asteroids into the only ones that it hasn't swallowed or hurled out of the solar system kind of nestle into Lagrange points, the L4 and L5 points, which are, you know, the only thing about Lagrange points, when you have like an orbital system, the interplay between the gravitational attraction of the thing it's orbiting and the orbiting itself creates these stable kind of like points at certain geometric locations around the thing that even though there's nothing there, you can actually orbit it as if it is a source of gravity. That's where the James Webb Telescope, it's at the, I think that what, L5 point of the moon Earth system. So it's like way far away and it's gonna be stable there, but it's not around a planet. So these things are like at 60 degrees ahead of Jupiter's orbit and 60 degrees behind it. And they're called Trojans because I guess the two groups, one's called the Greeks, one are the Trojans because astronomers are nerds like that.
Okay.
Iridium, and supposedly there's supposed to be like a million 1 kilometer size objects in this asteroid belt that is not the actual asteroid belt, which is I thought was interesting. And iridium is the second most dense metal that we know of. The only denser is I think osmium, but it's highly reactive and toxic. Iridium is famous for being extremely hard, extremely difficult to manufacture, and extremely high melting point, and its extreme non-reactivity. So it's also extremely rare because it is so heavy that most of the iridium in Earth sank to the core with all the nickel and iron when the Earth is still a hot ball of shit and it was differentiating by gravity. So like there is, guess how much tonnage the entire world produces of iridium each year?
60
tons? Less than 7 tons of iridium are mined across the entire Earth.
Jeez.
In a year. So it's extremely rare. It's very useful. Like some of its main uses are for crucibles in high temperature, high pressure crystalline manufacturing. And that is how we make integrated circuits. You know, those are all silicon crystal wafers that have to be made to exacting tolerances, and iridium lined crucibles are what hold those molten crystals as they're forming. Iridium tipped spark plugs are the reason that our engines last 10,000 miles or 100,000 miles instead of 10 or 20,000 miles between tune-ups, because iridium can resist the high temperature blast of electrical spark that hits the spark plugs.
For all mankind doesn't have any of those. It's all electric.
And the other thing that they do is they're very useful for like biomedicine. There's certain radioactive isotopes of iridium that they can insert like little splinters inside the cancer cells to direct radiation right to the cancer instead of just like blasting the whole body section with
kind of thing.
Yeah,
for radiation.
Yeah. And since they're stable and unreactive, they're like perfect for that purpose. So there's a lot of like really high tech uses, which is why everyone's horny for them and for all mankind. So, but I didn't know because I'm like, iridium? What the fuck? I honestly have no idea why this is such a big deal.
We know why it's a big deal for the Russians. Apparently, it's one of the Soviet Union's biggest exports, and they are not eager to lose a valuable income source from exporting that, because there would be no need to export it if they caught this massive $20 trillion worth of iridium.
And it sounds like that they are, you know, the Russia's had economic problems trying to, you know, navigate the transition between, you know, their Soviet form of communism and more open capitalism. And obviously, if you have a big, important, expensive, like I think iridium is worth like half of gold right now. If you just flood the market with $70 trillion of that, that's going to hurt the Russian economy. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Bad news all around.
A lot of fear mongering on the news about, you know, something that's potentially very good for humanity is being spun as, well, this is another job destroyer. We remember what happened with Helios and Helium-3, and when that became popular, everybody was out of work. There was so much strife, it caused terrorism and all sorts of things.
Because the technology did that. The technology, right. Turned people into terrorists.
Yeah, it wasn't the fact that they didn't have anywhere to turn because they didn't have any way out of the bad situation that not having a job puts you in that economy. So
it's NASA's fault. wasn't bad government policy. It's now they should try not discovering things. Honestly,
yeah. Just let's stick to the status quo on every front, and everything will be fine. Yeah. And we find
people
out
have
that
been saying this for a long time.
some people have been saying this for a long time.
It's literally true. Literally true. Just stop. Everything's good enough right now. Okay. We don't need any more stuff.
And the date here, July 2nd, 2003, is supposed to let you know, hey, if a few months have passed, and if you didn't, you know, notice it in this scene, they're going to say later, essentially these past few months or whatever.
Yeah.
Since they sent Svetlana down. All right, Danielle dreams of Happy Valley at the time when they were rationing their food, waiting for rescue, and she delivers Danny, the bad Danny, some meals in exile, and then she's awakened to hear the asteroid news.
It is neat now that they're aging everybody up, you know, it's cool that they can do flashbacks effortlessly. It's like, hey, you guys, you know, Chris Marshall and... You have to spend like 10 minutes or, you know, an hour less in makeup. Just show up with, you know, a little bit of aging and you're good to go. But it's cool. It's very as bad as some of the aging makeup. Like when you see them, you know, 10 years ago, it's like, oh, right. Yeah. OK. It looks good. It looks realistic.
I got to ask you now that Danny is back. Bad Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Were you more excited to, or maybe excited is not the right word. Were you more eager to satisfy an itch of knowing what happened to Bad Danny, or were you more disappointed that Bad Danny is back in the show when you saw this scene?
The first time I was through this, I'm like, oh my God, are we finally going to get this answer? And do I care about this answer? And, I honestly was a little underwhelmed.
I mean, we already knew the answer. There was no real mystery around it, right? He died. He died on Mars. And the only mystery is how.
Yeah. I think that everyone kind of come around to the idea he died on Mars. But like, you know, and I think suicide was a popular theory. But like the circumstances why... How did Ed feel about it? How did Danielle feel about it?
I mean, we know how they would feel about it.
Did he use the North Koreans' pistol? Did he, you know, did he pop his helmet? I was hoping he cracked his faceplate. I was hoping that he actually just like, you know, just opened up the sunroof. Like, was it Tim Robbins did that on Mission to Mars?
Oh, does he? I don't remember.
It's just rolled down the window, you know, just breathe in the Martian atmosphere. I was kind of disappointed that he just did the slow asphyxiation point. But yeah, I don't know. Seems like there'll be some emotional fallout from this, but like I mean it's tough for me cuz I thought the Danny Karen stuff was the by far worst shit, the most unwatchable shit this show has done, and it just keeps hanging around like a stale fart, you know.
Oh yeah. I think this is the end of it though. Both of those people are dead at this point. I know we got them both back in this episode, but also this feels like a final time. I don't think we ever need to explore like the feelings about Danny in the future.
Wait till you start off a scene in federal prison and it's Jimmy.
You're right.
You might be right though, because like, not only did they deal with Danny, but like immediately Danielle and Ed used that as a weapon to try to hurt each other. So it's like, it seems like that we're about out of gas with the storyline, but dear God, I've said that three or four times before.
And the characters who had relationships with him, and especially in this scenario, are now seemingly going to be split up as well. So I don't see a lot of future potential for the storyline. I was satisfied to see it come to a conclusion because I was curious how it happened, but I already knew all of the emotional fallout from it, right?
Yeah,
like, and of course, that was Danny, all very... who's trying to mentor the kid, is going to feel bad about it. Ed, who hates the kid for, you know, being a derelict of duty, is going to not feel bad about it at all.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he did. His face says he felt a little bad.
I think Ed, and we also know that Danny, from Danielle, the good Danny, that he fell apart. Like, he kind of went completely AWOL mentally and emotionally, and her and Kuz had to hold the whole base together, which we saw was in bad shape. That's the other thing. You know, like, this is, I'm wondering what kind of spice this is going to add, you know, Ed hurling the accusation of quitter to her. Because Ed likes to project a lot, seems like. And if he checked out mentally on that mission after Danny, no wonder Danielle's like, fuck this, I'm going home, you know? And then maybe Ed should have made that decision too. Go home, be with Kelly and his granddaughter. But I mean, Ed, it feels like this episode, and I hate it because Ed's, you know, he's up there in terms of my favorite characters. But it's like he's the living embodiment of, you know, Harvey Dent's theory on Batman, that you either die the hero or you live long enough to become the villain. Because,
yeah,
like, what would season one or two Ed think of this Ed that is inarguably putting people's lives in danger for his own glory?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I feel like he's been progressively stepping in it. You've seen his foot coming down into the pile of shit for the last couple of seasons now, and this is the scene where it finally hits.
It's too bad Molly's dead, because I feel like she's the only one that could both fully understand Ed's bullshit and impulses, and the only one that could actually check him, and vice versa. They acted as very good checks and balances on each other's ego. And
yeah, it was so sad.
She died the hero, so it left him to descend into craftitude as the villain, I guess.
Apparently. Yeah, I'm so sad to see it go this way, because I talked earlier, you know, in the season about how Danielle and Ed share a special relationship, and that should be extremely valuable to both of them and meaningful.
And it is.
And it doesn't.
But
it's not manifesting in the ways you would want it to, right? It's manifesting in anger and resentment.
Yeah, especially, and I understand where Danny's anger and resentment comes from, because, you know, we talked about, like, she literally broke her arm to try to help out the bros here. And she's, you know, when that speech she gives about the mistake after mistake, like, I feel that, because that's kind of like what we've been talking about these last two seasons. Like, Ed just, you know, makes some bad calls based on being an emotional, you know, kind of cowboy. And I understand. Like, I'm not being super harsh and judgy about Ed, although you can't kill people because you got a shaky hand, you know, and you got to think, like, knowing what we know now, you go back to that first episode, if someone else is in that command chair, does Kuz die? Is someone that doesn't have to worry about their hand trembling and keep that throttle feathered properly, can they get that asteroid's oscillations under control? I mean, I don't know. It seems like the Russians fucked up the manufacturing process too, but we know for certain an American was putting the whole mission in risk for an absolutely inexcusable reason.
Can you imagine, flip that around? Somebody else is at the seat there and they have the shaky hand, and Ed's the commander at the base, and he finds out about that. He blows his top. He goes off on them, right? The way that Danielle does here. Like, it's a shame because, I think you talk about early seasons Ed, he definitely would have the same reaction that Danielle's having. You put everyone that is on your mission's lives in danger because you're too much of an ego monster to ever say, I can't handle this.
Well, he knows his body, so.
Sure. I'm 100% with Danielle this episode. I think the base, you know, things have been getting more tense on the base since Danielle showed up, but that's only because of circumstance. I think she's doing a great job as a commander, trying to come in here and fix a lot of problems that were festering under Ed's command. I guess not Ed's command, but, you know, with Ed advising the commander of the base.
Yeah, I think the previous commander might have been a little bit more of a pushover, and maybe that's part of the problem, is Ed just got used to kind of having his way as the old man at Mars, and Kuz backing him up. Yeah. But a lot of the friction has been coming from Ed. You know, and I think it's really telling that Palmer informed on him, because, like, that's a person who clearly worships Ed and is kind of disillusioned and devastated by his hero not acting like a hero should. And, you know, but it's I don't know. We're going to step all over the confrontation later on. But you're right. I think most thinking people are going to be on Danny's side, even if you are sympathetic to what Ed's going through. And sure. I find myself sympathetic, but my sympathy stops when he's putting people's lives in risk and mm-hmm. when he's being just a complete shit to his commanding officer.
Oh my God, the attitude he's copping this episode. Yeah,
like I said, I always do this like with Riker and Picard. And I'm just like, there's no fucking way, no fucking way.
All right. President Gore reminds Eli how important it is that America capture this asteroid and fast. They have to approach it delicately, though, because the M7 nations each want their own piece of the asteroid. And the Soviets specifically don't want to lose their iridium export profits. Kind of talked about that part already. But there's this new character, Ron, I think is his name. And he seems like a real ball buster. He works for the president and he's got his fingers here in the NASA pie.
What if he's supposed to be Gore's chief of staff or something?
Yeah, I don't really know yet.
And we didn't never had a Gore administration, so I wouldn't know to look him up. I mean, this is the part like of the political bullshit where it's like Marv, who should have a feather in his cap for finding a way to steer between the canyon walls of the Russia-U.S. positions on Svetlana. And thinks, you know, and Al Gore is impressed with them. But it's quickly like, what have you done for me lately? Because yeah, you did that great. The president's grateful. But also, if you fuck up this asteroid thing and we don't get elected, it's going to be your fault. Like, boy, yeah. Poor Marv.
Yeah.
Might be time to plug up the sinks and leave the water running and get out of there, Marv. You know?
Yeah, the cops
one last heist, buddy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll talk more about that when he kind of discusses things with the Russian space commander here. But Danielle sets the stakes for her team up in Happy Valley. They have 10 weeks to grab this asteroid or it's gone. Ed cops a major attitude with Danielle during the meeting, so she pulls him aside to try and clear the air. That doesn't go too well.
And look at the staff, too. Like, the way they're looking at each other when she's dragging him into her ready room yell at him. Yeah, it's just bad. He's talking about being bad for morale. I don't know. The show's telling me that Ed is playing this completely wrong and interpreting this completely wrong.
Yeah, nothing she says there just strikes me as like running around flapping our arms. Like, Ed's just being an asshole here because he's pissed about Svetlana.
And he kind of wants Danny to fail. And it's like, this is like the exposed kind of the lazy hypocrisy of Ed, is because he seems like he wants it both ways. Like when he's talking to the lower decks people, it's all rah, rah, rah. Where's your service to country and your duty and all that? But then when it's like Danny trying to put out military protocol, it's all like, this isn't a NASA government. This is, you know, he's trying to have it both ways and interpret everything into his benefit. And as a long-term good Danielle fan, the way that Ed is treating her as a commander in front of the troops, so to speak, is just beyond the pale.
Oh, and that call
blood boiling
on the Ranger later is just like the worst, man.
Yeah. And good Danny's trying to salvage it, you know? She's trying to like do
her thing.
She's
taking him aside, not blowing him up right here in front of everybody. She's doing it right.
Right, and when she's on open comms, you know, trying to have a disagreement with him, you know, she's not going to have a knockdown drag out and all, but boy, and Ed, I don't know, does he interpret all this as weakness, or does he interpret this as, does he think he's untouchable because he is the old man of Mars and he has
he's
such
certainly
a story?
Acting like it, yeah.
And there might be some blowback on this. Like, he might have enough like cronies in NASA and at Helios, and in even the U.S. government admirers that he might be able to, because like, unless you're on Mars, how the fuck do you know how far Ed's fallen?
Sure.
You know, like if he calls crying that like, oh, Danielle came out of retirement, she's bust mo, and she clipped my wings, and if we don't make the asteroid capture, it's going to be because she made this person up. I'm kind of worried that Danielle might be on a hot seat just because of Ed's bullshit.
I don't know, because she's got Hobson and seemingly, well, it depends on how far he falls from grace with this whole asteroid thing, because, you know, if his reputation gets tarnished with the president, maybe there isn't the safety net that Danielle has to say, hey, Hobson, you hired me to do a job. This guy's interfering with it. Get him out of here.
But they seem like they're maneuvering pieces that he's going to feel that political pressure. Like, I can already hear, like, Al's like,
oh, yeah.
Damn it, Marv. This asteroid thing's touch and go, and now you got a command change, and you got the CO and the XO at each other's throats. Like, what is going on up there? Yeah, it's not going to be good.
I think Hobbs is just going to walk into the ocean, never be seen again. I don't know, man. He's taking it on all sides here. It's rough for Hobbs. I feel bad for him.
And even his wins don't mean anything. He had a huge win last episode, and it's, yeah, fuck you. Pay me, you know?
Yeah. I found it hilarious for Danielle in this scene right before Ed does his Ed stuff, to be saying, okay, all personal matters are taking a back seat. We got to get this mission done. Good luck with the personal stuff taking a back seat with Ed. Because Ed is, he's all about the personal matters at the moment.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, the fact that they shake on, all right, bygones, we're going to reinvest, make this mission happen, and then we find out the very next scene he's been doing a whole bunch of bullshit behind her back and self-serving promotions and rearranging her crew. Just, it's, like I said, it's, I do love me some Ed, but it's really painful to watch. It's really painful to watch.
Yeah, he should have gone home. I don't know if he would have been happier there, but everybody else would have.
Although I will say, this is another thing about the show being a little bit dumber than previous seasons. The fact that no one has mentioned that this man has spent his declining years in 1/3 Earth's gravity. Like, no one's even said, like, I would have respected the show a bit more if Ed had been like, at some point, you know, I thought about going back, but, like, I talked to the flight surgeons and there's some real, you know, concern about my bone density or my cardiovascular system or whatever, but, like, they
lung capacity probably.
I mean, he's been here for 15 years straight. Like, that's, and he's an old man. Yeah. He was, like, taking testosterone and HGH just to keep flight ready back when he was spending a lot of time in Earth gravity. So it's weird that they haven't even mentioned that.
Yeah, he'd step out of the ship, out of the shuttle on Earth, and he'd just crumple like Obi-Wan's robes.
I feel like, yeah, if you spin from 60 to 75 on Mars and you came back to Earth, you would never walk again.
Yeah.
You might be labored breathing.
Oh, definitely labored breathing with as much smoking as he's done. He's trying to terraform Mars. He's definitely got some lung capacity issues.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. He might not be able to go home, but they don't address that. That's not a concern for Ed, right? He doesn't want to go home because he loves space and he doesn't love his family all that much, apparently. Okay, let's go to Ilya's bar, where Miles spots Sam getting friendly with an Italian, I think. He says grazie at one point. Neither he or Ilya are happy about it. They get back to work discussing Lee's wife. Ilya says, yeah, we're not going to be able to get her up here, but they need to break the news to Lee at the right time. But in the meantime, they're going to lie to him.
Yeah, that's the thing. I as you heard last episode, I was trying to find a way to square this. Like, you know, what's the reasonable ask here? Is he trying to bring his wife's ashes home? Is he trying to bring a picture? Is he trying to secure a community? No, they're making it very clear that Lee expects them to smuggle his wife through the Martian cargo system.
Yep. With like a breathing apparatus.
That's, I'm like, you can't fucking smuggle a person from like China to United States in the belly of an airplane. This seems just beyond stupid.
It's batshit crazy. I think this was one of the breaking points for me in the episode. I'm like, oh, they literally mean they want to get her up here on Mars. That's asinine.
And the fact that, like, no one is saying, like, I'm glad that Ilya's, I wish Ilya's, like, look, it's not possible. We all know it's not possible. It's an impossible ask, but we gotta find the right way to break. But, like, Ilya's like, no, it's just too dangerous. It's too much heat on us trying to get, oh, really? Trying to smuggle a citizen out of North Korea
onto a
and
US
then get
shuttle.
Her onto a Martian shuttle in the car. It's just, oh. It doesn't make it makes it, it's like one of those things where it's like, I just don't know how to invest in it. It'd be like if, you know, there's a plot line where Miles finds a fucking sword embedded into a Russian rock, and if he pulls it out, he can be king of Mars. Like,
That's believable.
Maybe if I was watching John Carter or whatever the fuck that thing is, but like, I'm watching For All Mankind. What is this sword stuck in a stone and king of Mars business? Like, it's that kind of leap for me. And yeah. I can think that Lee might be delusional enough to think that like all the Americans and they don't follow rules and capitalism and you bribe enough money and you can do whatever you want. And that's true, honestly, most of the time if we're talking about, but like when special circumstances, like being on Mars, you really run up against the limits of what capitalism can do in terms of like especially gray black market smuggler type operations. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this isn't as stupid as I think, but it feels really stupid to me.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. I don't like this plot point at all. And like I said before, I think it's just as dramatic if all he wants is a phone call, and it's hard to get a phone call to her, right? Like,
yeah,
I that's just as meaningful to me, and it seems just about doable. So yeah. I don't know. Anyway, who is good enough for Sam, do you think? Ilya says, yeah, this Italian guy.
The other thing is, can we also give pause to think about how phenomenally, like, let's say you get her out of North Korea. Mm-hmm. You get her into the cargo bay. Mm-hmm. She survives on tubes of oxygen and chapstick, like on the way up there. She's consuming whatever they got in the thing
for months, yeah.
What do you do with her on base?
Put her at level 4. Level 4 is where all of the dissidents and fugitives hide out.
Does she live in Ed's grow up? Like, does she, like, because, like, she can't, she can't ever be seen by anyone.
Right, right. I mean, you put her in a jumpsuit, one of these Helios grunt jumpsuits, and no one will ever notice her, right?
I'm dubious. With the way they track resources up there, that they wouldn't notice an extra person.
Yeah, potentially not. Although, you know, Ilya and Miles have the extra resources. They could feed her, right? Just get an extra sandwich from the vending machine or whatever.
Yep.
But no, it's insane. I'm humoring this scenario, but no, this would never happen. It's crazy talk.
Yeah.
And yet the show is talking about it seriously, as if this was a possibility. And maybe these... Yeah. I mean, Ilya certainly knows that this is an impossibility, not just too risky, but impossible.
I'm going to tell you something. I don't think the showrunners know. That's what I think the real problem. I think the people writing this show don't know how dumb this plot is. Because if they did, the easy fix for this is have Miles. This was the conversation I was expecting Miles and Ilya to be like, look, we both know this is never going to happen, but we don't want to lose the North Korean market. We don't want our... you know, connection to get blown as far as the thermostat thing. So we got to kind of humor this out until we figure out another solution. Mm-hmm. The fact that that's not what they're doing tells me that from the show's perspective, it's possible to sneak people out of North Korea. And like, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough for me.
Yeah, same here. So the lower decks then discuss the asteroid find. Some think it's a good thing. Sam points out that they're going to get screwed by this, but the Italian sees it as a glass half full situation. They can make out like bandits during the process.
Yeah, it's like the Chinese word for crisis is danger plus opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Like this. I thought this scene in isolation is really good, where it's, you know, like what sells these hard, oppressive times is the dream that if we put in the work and the dice fall just right, we can make the jump into, you know, another economic class, right? Like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, maybe we'll work 6 or 7 days. Maybe it'll be dangerous. But like the gold rush, think of, you know, people will do like that's a great example of the California gold rush is like people would do that to themselves. People would destroy their own bodies. People would work 7 days a week, you know, just for the chance at striking it rich. Right.
And that's a better situation than they're in because those people own the profits of whatever comes of their labor here. That's not true. They right. owned whatever piece of the profits that Helios deems worth them getting to get them to do the job. Helios and NASA and these countries are the ones who actually benefit from this, not the people doing the work.
Yeah, the risks are subsidized, the profits are privatized.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I think Sam sees that. The people who look at this as glass half full don't really see that.
Yeah.
But, you know, overall, there's a larger argument to be made that this would be a good thing for humanity. So you need people doing the work to get the rewards for humanity. So how do you make that happen without exploiting these people, without promising these people things that are never going to come true?
Good question.
All right. Kelly gets Alex ready for school when she hears that Dev is going to Mars, and she goes into Helios to tell Leda about it. And they both go to Dev, upset that he didn't tell him. And he says the action is on Mars and they need him up there. Dev wants Leda to handle the M7 negotiations and Kelly and her astrobiology team to go up to Mars with him. Kelly would have to leave her son for months, though, so she's not sure about that plan. Then Dev leaves to go tie up some loose ends.
So when I first watched this, I thought this was Dev maybe stealth reneging on his promises.
And Kelly does too, right?
Yeah,
pushing it back again. Huh?
Oh no, I'm not pushing. I'm accelerating it, but I'm going to make you an offer that I know you won't take. You're going to have to leave your kid and go to Mars with
me.
Oh,
okay.
Then Elaida, it's like, you know, like, oh, I'm not de-emphasizing your prominence in the company. In fact, you're going to be calling all the shots. Like, he's putting these positions where he thinks that people have to turn it down or fail. But after I've watched it, I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe he just is like just really impulsive and he doesn't think it all the way through, but he doesn't want to renege on his promises, so these are good faith efforts because
he expects
people to just make the sacrifices and do the things required, and why wouldn't they want to?
That's who he is. He's a pusher. He's a guy who has a vision and pushes everyone around him into that box, and if they don't fit it, he jettisons them and gets somebody who will fit into that box. And
did he get that from his mom or his dad?
I mean, I think he got that from his dad.
His mom seems pretty pushy too, though, just in a different way, like a more Harambe way of pushing than get yours
complicated
and be ambitious. Yeah, I don't know because I've never seen his father. I just heard Dev recount stories and see stuff in the news clippings and things like that. But like,
yeah,
man, I was really conflicted about what to think about his mom. I guess we need to wait to get there. But like this episode really upped the complexity of my understanding of Dev's character and who he is
in a good way. Yeah, and, I really.
Yeah.
Before I was torn on him, but just based on like his actions around private economic interests versus public good. Now it's bringing in the personal stuff that I feel is connecting pretty well.
That doesn't mean I like agree with his position. I'm just like I think I'm understanding what makes him tick in a way that I really didn't. I had a lot more question marks and head scratching, and he's coming into focus a little more, and it's a much more interesting character as a result.
Yeah, and even in just the span of this episode, they get that new information to be super interesting and relevant to his character, because he now like he's pushed Kelly into something that I think he's feeling a little bit of regret over. Like, he's just torn up another family, right? I mean, or potentially he, when she comes in, she's saying, you know, she has a new plan. But before that, he, I think, is thinking about his actions and how, you know, his family was destroyed by this program. Or I guess not technically the NASA program, but, you know, his space dreams. Mm-hmm. And now he's pushing those on other people, forcing them into difficult situations over their families that potentially will tear them apart. I think he's feeling the weight of all that. Like, he's realizing I'm the guy who's destroying families, but I'm also very driven and I have a vision and I think it's worth pursuing. And I don't know how to reconcile those two things.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's an interesting thing to see people wrestle with.
For sure. Yeah. And Kelly's wrestling with that too. We'll get to that here in a bit. But I thought it's smart resource allocation, right? I mean, as much as I would say bad about Dev, he's also a very agile business person. I mean, the idea of taking Kelly with him to finish the training en route, I think is an extremely smart one, right? It buys you 2 months of time. And even if Kelly just wants to go back home after that, they've still gained that 2 months head start. So,
right.
You know, it's a lot like when Aleda figures out a way to get their supplies to Mars faster than they thought possible in last season. I think these people are extremely capable and versatile.
And I think he also senses an opportunity here, right or wrong, that like this is maybe a once in a generational opportunity. This asteroid will be, we even talked about this, but they established that this asteroid's going so fast that there's exactly a 6 month window before this pure tritium or iridium asteroid is going to be flung out of the solar system, never to be seen again. Now, part of me says, like, well, if there's like a million 1 kilometer asteroids in these Trojan Lagrange point or Jovian orbits, like, okay, well, maybe we miss this cab, but there'll be another one. The more we explore, the more. But like, on the other hand,
but
like,
will one come this close to Mars? Will one be headed
in our
way.
Lifetime? Right. And like at this, and so like the idea of like, I can't wait for 6 weeks for another trip. I need to be out there now. Mm-hmm. Like there's going to be decisions on the ground made, and I need to be out there making them. Like I understand.
Super
his point.
Interesting, given who runs this base, right? I mean, this is a joint government operation between the M7 group.
I think the private sector is going to start flexing its muscles.
It seems like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be, you know, as much conflict as there already is in Happy Valley, Dev getting there won't help.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just more management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always helpful. All right. Also, there's one other thing. His line about, you know, you spent 15 years on the search for life when he's talking to Kelly. It would be a shame to drop it now that we're so close to the finish line. Dude, this is where you know he's a bit of a charlatan. He has no idea if they're close to the finish line. They might be close to the fruition of her project, but finding life in outer space that might take another 1,000 years. We don't know.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that there's life on Mars.
And certainly none of the lava tubes that she's putting all of her hopes on. So
no guarantee, but he's playing it like, oh, we are so close to finishing the goal that you set out to accomplish. And it's a joke.
Yeah, he's pumping that sunk cost fallacy pretty hard.
Absolutely. All right, Ed took the liberty of making some changes to his crew list upon the Ranger, which Danielle objects to. Ed cops a major attitude again, but Danielle lets it slide, trying to keep things from blowing up right now. Ed then has to delay a scheduled test due to a shaky hand, and Palmer notices. This is the HR guy from before, right? The drill sergeant HR guy?
Yeah, he's like the XO's XO, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, this is Ed's guy, and even Ed's guy is saying this is a bit much, and... Mm-hmm. I wonder if Ed played this politically a little bit better, but like, it's like, not only are you getting caught with your hand, you know, red handed in your cookie jar, but it's like, you're pissing in the cookie jar too. Because Danielle's like, you're disregarding protocol. You're doing this, that, the other. And Ed's being like, oh, come on. He's like citing shit that was like maybe true at NASA 25 years ago, but probably hasn't been true since Margo, you know, won the culture war over Molly back last season. I think it's tough to watch to see Ed be this big asshole to Danny.
I agree. And just being a shit about it too, right? There's a way he could have said everything he said in this scene that I wouldn't have felt as bad about, but he's so clearly trying to make this personal.
Yeah, there's like a parenthetical, and what are you going to do about it? At the end of every voice transmission, that just makes your blood boil. Because
he's
forcing Danny's hand, and when her hand is forced, he's going to be, oh, how dare you raise your hand against me? Like, you know.
Yeah. What does he expect to happen when he's this disrespectful to his commanding officer? It's ridiculous. He would never have tolerated this from one of his subordinates.
Yeah, I did not expect the mess amount of punk ass bitchery from one Admiral Edward Baldwin, but here we are.
He's dealing with a lot, right? Personally, he feels like his career is coming to an end. He's already made decisions that have alienated his family. Like, there's so much going on personally, but I don't feel like that warrants any of this behavior.
Yeah, and tell that shit to the guys lower decks. They're eating Martian rocks.
Right.
That they're calling meatloaf and for half pay, and their families are home.
While you've got a secret weed farm, yeah.
Yeah, come on.
T-minus 3 seconds until the ad.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Touchdown, and we're back. All right, let's go over to Julio's, where Aleda tries to talk Kelly into going into the Mars mission. Kelly gives Aleda also some encouragement, telling her that she's going to be great at negotiating with the M7. I think this is the scene where Kelly figures out the one reason to go, right?
Her son's health problems being solved on Mars, or the...
The one reason is she really wants to go, but she figures out the one way she can make that happen, I guess.
Yeah.
Because there are a million reasons not to go, but...
And it's tough, man. Like I said, as a parent, it's really tough trying to make decisions about what's best for your family and separate that from what's best for you. Is it better to have more resources? Is it better to have more parental time? I think there's also, like, the thing I kept on thinking... that I could never do it is like the idea that something, you know, as routine and safe as space travel apparently is becoming, notwithstanding the first episode when you're trying to lasso an asteroid, the idea that if I die, my kid's an orphan, like their dad's already gone. Like there's only one other person on this planet that's devoted to, you know, keeping this person alive. He's 7 years old. And
well,
what if she dies
to
too?
Russia. Yeah.
Well, but even the babushka, she's, you know, like that's the other thing about the grandparent is like she's going to die when he's 20, you know, maybe 30 if he's lucky. It's just a bad deal. It's a bad deal. And I'd find it very hard to justify leaving my kid and going someplace that dangerous if the other parent is already, you know, out of the picture. And Kelly's really wrestling with that. And
she
I
is,
like to
understandably.
See it. Yeah. This is easy to empathize with struggle.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's only one part of what I was talking about the episode wrestling with the sort of way that the space program fucks with families. Dev's the other side of that. We're going to see that here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that struck me when I was thinking about this is they're setting up a potential scenario where Ed could be shown for what he is to his family directly. They can come up here and see Ed's sad state. And I think there's two ways that could go. They could play a beautiful ending where he gets to hug his grandson and everything is okay as the old man passes on, or it could cause intense personal devastation. And I don't know which I prefer.
No, that's the fascinating angle. The fact that Kelly is coming here
with
and
his
the fact
grandson
that Dev is coming here. Yeah. And the grandson is coming here and as he's being disgraced publicly.
Uh-huh. Maybe they'll pass each other on the way. Like he'll wave to her at the window as he's taken back for court-martialing. I don't know.
Yeah. And the other thing that's complicated is Danielle was Kelly's commanding officer, too. Like, she knows that Danielle's not a mad woman who's obsessed with power or glory, or she wants her ass in that cockpit, which is
And she'll
Ed's.
See that. Even if she didn't already know that, she'll see it. Like, everybody who looks at the scenario knows that Ed's in the wrong here.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way they contrast all this stuff, like slightly different takes of like duty versus honor versus family versus, I think it's just really delicious.
Yeah, everybody's got a different take on it. All right, President Gore takes personal responsibility for the asteroid's discovery on the news, which draws ire and mockery from everyone. Hobson calls Ron, pissed off that the president's destroying their goodwill with the other M7 nations, and Ron tells him, elections are more important than your goodwill.
Do you know what they're alluding to here?
With Gore taking personal responsibility for finding this asteroid? Yeah, it's where he claimed that he invented the internet.
It's funny because like back in 2000, I was on the, broadly speaking, the other side of the political spectrum from where I am today. I was much more conservative and personally, socially, and economically. And I thought this was a real knee slapper, Al Gore trying to claim credit for inventing the internet. But so I looked into it because I actually thought that he actually said that he misspoke. But what he said in an interview, I thought this was like during a debate with Bush. I'd misremembered all these details. What he actually said is he was in a sit down interview with, I think, CNN. Someone asked him, like, well, why should people support you over your other Democratic contender? And he's like, you know, talking about his like vision for the country's future. And he said, you know, one of the things I did is a bill I passed helped. What is his act? He said, he took the initiative to create the internet, right? And I guess, in fact, that like in the early 90s, when the internet was not the internet, you know, there was no net.
Did he start ICANN or something? Because that's the only way that claim seems credible.
He actually did a whole bunch of funding that poured money into American infrastructure. He had this speech in the 90s where he was going around saying that the coming century, it's not going to be about highways and water pipes and electric
bridges.
Lines.
We can let all that shit go. Nobody cares.
Apparently. This is the Clinton Gore future that we're living in. But what's going to be really important is the lines of communication. Like the only way to take advantage of advancements in the computer power is to have this. And he saw the internet as like the foundation of that. The DARPA project, the TCP/IP.
Sure.
And the thing is like the people who literally invented the internet, like people like Bob Kahn and Vince Cerf, they agree. They do give Al Gore credit for being one of the early visionaries in Congress that saw the potential for this technology, this stuff that came out of this, you know, trying to nuclear war-proof America's communication infrastructure and pass bills to like fund the development of that. And had he not, and then, you know, again, he didn't invent it. He didn't write the fucking TCP/IP stack. But it does seem like not what people did is they took his quote, stretched it out beyond its initial meaning. Like if Eisenhower had said in the 60s, you know, the things I put in place helped create the highway system. No one would say that Eisenhower invented the concept of highways. No one is that Eisenhower's out there with a shovel and cement or laying the highways.
But that's because the highways aren't a meme machine. And it just so happens that the thing that Al Gore claimed to have invented, or not claimed to have invented, but had been a big supporter of, is a thing that is specifically designed to churn out bullshit and misinformation. And so everything that happened, like every single word that he said there was just spun into this meme of Al Gore invented the internet.
Yeah. And also, like, to be fair, the thing about Al Gore is like it does seem like he's a little bit of a fabulist. He does tend to stretch accomplishments. He does tend to do that kind of like debate brain thing where he takes any advantage. But the also thing is, like, looking back over the last 20 years, I got to say, Al Gore probably on balance more right than he was wrong in terms of the environment, in terms of internet technology investment, in terms of infrastructure investment, in terms of, I don't know, maybe taking our budget surpluses and shoring up some of our infrastructure and our safety nets rather than just giving away his tax cuts.
There's no question we'd be better off with him as president than Bush.
But he's a big fucking nerd. But he's a big fucking nerd. Nobody wants to have a beer with him.
Right.
Fuck him. But it's like I thought it's funny to see that this is like the same thing where, you know, him getting a little bit the way he talks and the way he carries himself and the way he kind of the people just took it and ran with it, you know. Oh, well, yeah, Al Gore out there with the telescope and, you know, discovering an asteroid and
shit. No, I do. That's very true to life. It's pretty good stuff. I also like Daniel Stern here getting frustrated by Ron and the president's demands here and throwing his papers and then realizing, oh, I actually needed those papers. Just like his comedic moments at the end of these very hard scenes. I think it's great.
Yeah, he's a very serious guy, important guy who also is kind of, you know, he's a goofball.
Well, they're painting a picture of him being out of his depth, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to be negotiating with people about the price of a screw on your assembly line. It's another thing to have nuclear powers enforcing their wishes on the state of the world and you having to deal with all these pressures from every side.
Yeah.
I think he might be a little out of his depth here.
What kind of deals you can make with very little leverage.
We'll see. We'll see if he becomes a traitor the way that his previous.
You think the bullfinch is going to get her little finchy talons into him?
I don't know, man. Because I thought Margo was good at this job, and then look how that all turned out. So
true. All I'm saying is, Marv is if you just go to the FBI, none of that will ever happen.
All right, let's go back to Happy Valley, where they're having problems figuring out how the Ranger can capture the asteroid with its weak engines, low thrust. After the meeting, Palmer sticks around to tell Danielle about Ed's shaky hand. It's a big swing. They're him really going out on a limb here, because, as Danielle says, this is a very serious accusation, and if he's wrong about it. But, you know, he just can't help what he saw. And he saw
makes
correctly,
him so,
we know.
So it makes it so credible. Like, if Sam comes in here, I saw Ed's hand shaking, Danielle would be like, okay, whatever. But this guy, like Ed's man, right-hand man, who gives his big speech about how much he worships him as a hero since he's a little kid and how he's the epitome of integrity and honesty
honor,
and
man.
Accountability.
Yeah.
And coming saying, like, I know what this means, and I'm still reporting it anyway. I mean, it's... I really like scenes like this because it show like Ed's kind of being hoisted by his own petard a bit. Like the way Ed's lived his life in the heroic kind of noble truth-telling fashion shaped his admirers such that they would betray him like this because it's the right thing to do.
It is. Ed's being extremely dishonorable.
Yes.
If it's that definition, taking responsibility even when it's hard, that is exactly the opposite of what Ed is doing. Yes, it would be 100%. Hard for him to say, I am not fit for duty right now. I need to take myself off of this mission and give it to someone who can handle it. That would
and
be hard to do when he's not.
Your wisdom, the practical knowledge you have, the fact that you could still be an important figure just hanging around the base and like training and advising mm-hmm. and... But that's not good enough. He's got to be the guy. He's got to be the guy with his hand on a stick calling the ball.
Yeah. And I get it. I do. But it's dishonorable when you're not that guy anymore to try and act like that guy.
But it's like I said, it's got to be hard. Like I've often, yes. you know, you see like big sports figures retire. How do you ever get over uh-huh. and like being an astronaut for as long as he's done it in this particular alternate universe where like astronauts are these big... it's got to be. Yeah. Hey, yeah. How the hell do you ever?
You take the money from you go back to home to Earth. You ask Kelly if you can borrow a bunch of her Karen money and then you start gambling on NASA based shit. Right.
Yeah.
You start betting millions of dollars on whether or not Dev's going to get to the asteroid before the Soviets.
That's what you do. It's like telling Tom Brady, yeah, the roar of the crowd's one thing, but have you tried going to a sports book in Vegas, you know?
I mean, it works for Michael Jordan, so,
at least
when he's not trying to play baseball, yeah.
I was going to say, I've seen his documentary. It doesn't seem like he's resting easy on his laurels, you know?
True. All right. We get some more dream here. I think it's hard to tell if this is all happening, like, in another dream or if this is just a continuation of the dream that she was woken up from earlier. But Danielle's out. She's preparing Danny's meals when she catches the attention of Ed, who watches her go out to feed the guy he hates. And it's worth pointing out here that they are all very hungry. Mm. They're all getting malnourished real time here as we watch this episode. So this food is pretty valuable to them as well. And Danny asks Danielle, the bad Danny asks Danielle if he can please come back to base. She says, sorry, but no, this is how it has to be. Gives him a Bible.
That's rough.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what their personal relationship is. Maybe they had a Bible study group back when he was trying to get over being an alcoholic or whatever. I don't know. Maybe they have a connection, but... I know how I'd feel if I was in his position and someone gave me a Bible. And if there's any Christians out there wondering, imagine you're in his position and someone hands you the Quran. You know, it's like
that can be
the thing to save your life if you've got the certain background and beliefs. But it also can be just such a hollow gesture. And I think Danny kind of knows it. I'm sorry. Good Danny knows it when she's handing it to him
Well, what can she do? Right. Here's the interesting thing, I think. She's the CO on this mission?
I think, wasn't it the case that Ed's kind of the commander? Because
for Helios.
Yeah, but NASA was stranded. Like, Russia got the ship blown up. Mm-hmm. NASA's stranded there without Helios. I think, effectively, Helios personnel are in command. So I think this is right.
That seems bonkers to me because they are not here. They are not the authority of the land. I would not think that they would be the authority of the land. But it's Mars. I don't know.
And whose facilities are, you know, it seems like it's like. I did wonder why that's the only way. Like, why keeping Danny, a bad Danny, ineffective?
Well, that's the thing. She's making the choice that. Appeases Ed is probably too strong a way to say it, but she's making the choice that she thinks is right given the things that have happened here. And it's the choice that Ed would make in this scenario. And I think when you contrast that with what's happening now in Happy Valley, she's making the choices that Ed wouldn't make, but are probably still the right choices. The way that they react to those are night and day.
Okay.
And I kind of like the juxtaposition of it.
Yeah. I just wondered, like, why you can't bring the capsule back. Like, if you're worried about, like, him waking up in the middle of the night and murdering you all, like, then why don't you... Yeah, why does he have to be in isolation like that? Because I'm pretty sure that's literally, like, you know, like holding people in solitary confinement is literally a human rights violation. I know you do it sometimes to protect people, and I know we do it here in the country, in this country, just cause, but like, I think internationally it is recognized as a human rights violation. And yeah, it just seems, it seems rough.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I don't necessarily feel a lot of sympathy for bad Danny here, but
yeah,
definitely the situation he's been put in is a bad situation.
He's in a bad spot, both literally and metaphorically. Like, you don't want to commit crimes and have a mental breakdown on Mars where people can get killed. But like, yeah, like, this guy's mentally ill. He's off his he's recovering addiction, and he's off his medication, and he is completely alone in a godforsaken, inhospitable, you know, huffing North Korean farts, smelling North Korean rotting food. Like, it's bad.
Do you think he got the news about Karen's death? His own brother was specifically involved in that.
Had to have.
Because that's another layer that I didn't even think about.
Although, I guess they could just keep it from him.
Danielle knows about it. Danielle's the only one who would keep it from him, I think. So she can't, and she can't say, no, don't tell him. Well, why not? I don't know. He just doesn't need to know.
The other thing is, like, you got to think his wife knows, right? About, like, all the shit he's been up to at Mars. Because, like, you know, I noticed when he's looking at his wife and kids, like, that's got a way, too. It's like, what do you got to look forward to?
Oh, yeah. You come back.
You're like a pariah on Mars. Like, maybe your wife will try to understand when you get back. And, like, you can try to rebuild something. But I don't know.
Yeah, he's got a kid. I don't know. I think there's another
shoe to drop too in later scenes I want to talk about, but
yeah. All right. Kelly tells Alex that she's going to Mars. He gets sad and angry and runs to his grandmother. She gets a very judgy look from Babushka.
It's rough.
What if you decide to stay forever like Poppy did? Devastating.
Of course. How could you ever tell a 7-year-old otherwise? Because, like, that's his, like, Mars is the place the people that I love go and they never come back from. Because it must be must be awesome, more awesome than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rough. Like I said, in the grand scheme of things, for all mankind versus my son, I don't got the courage, I guess, to do the brave thing for all mankind. Because I could never. I could fucking never.
Yeah, she comes up with a better solution than giving up her dreams or leaving her family. So
yeah,
good for her. All right, Brandt, the government relations guy, introduces himself to Elaida and asks if she's ready to get started contacting senators. She hasn't looked at the dossiers yet. That's going to become
Brandt
important pretty soon.
From government relations, look like they took in a lab all the douchiest parts from Thomas Middleditch and Will Arnett and put them into one human being.
Yep.
I think they cast him just so the lady could look him up and down and be like, oh, fuck, you know, this guy.
Uh-huh. I can handle senators. I can handle the M7, but this guy, oh, Jesus.
Do you think she's going to rise to the occasion?
I do.
Because it's...
I do. That seems to be her pattern. I think this will be a new moment of growth for her, and she'll have some growing pains. But yeah, I do.
She better start cracking the books, though, because it seems like she's going to go into this ill-prepared. But and it's not in her wheelhouse. Like, that's... I mean, kind of fucked Dev for putting her in this position.
Yeah.
You know, she wants to project manage a life on Mars thing. You're making her negotiate with heads of state about how to divvy up the asteroid pie. What?
Yeah. He's alienated everyone else, right? As far as I can tell, he doesn't have a board of directors anymore. He doesn't have a second fiddle in his company. He's just running it himself at this point.
Yeah, Dev is ascendant.
He is upper
right
management.
For sure. Yeah.
So there is no one to step in. I don't know. I have a lot of faith in Elaida. I think she does experience a lot of problems as she adapts to new situations, but also she grows into those roles. And it's a struggle, but it works out.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. All right, Miles gets a message from his wife showing off their new house that his smuggling money has bought, and she implies that they might be living together again when he gets back, but they'll talk about it later.
we'll see if Samantha has anything to say about this. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel over this Miles stuff.
Like, same here. When he's looking over, when she's talking to the Italian guy, I'm like, this is fucked up, dude. You're feeling some sense of ownership because why?
Yeah. There's definitely a spark there. Now you got this stuff. And,
but
you
they
know,
don't
the
pursue
thing,
it much in this episode, so I was grateful for that.
And the other, it's like, you know, I kept on hearing like Gus Fring's voice in the back of my mind. What does a man do, Miles? A man provides. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, is their relationship better for any reason other than, you know, man provide. Like, man got slightly bigger cave free from father-in-law. Yeah, man. I was like, that's weird. Is their relationship real? Or is he just a goofball that they got married young and it's kind of a loser and the scales fell from his wife's eyes? And I don't know. I don't know how to invest in this, especially when he's making eyes at Samantha.
I don't think you should, is the thing.
I really don't think so, because Miles
looks like he's headed off a cliff, in my opinion.
He already fell off one. I just sat literally at the bottom waiting to die.
Yeah,
like, Sam had to save his ass. Like, what are these women seeing in this guy?
Yeah.
I guess he's got motivation. He's got ambition.
Unless they're telling a conversion story here of ideology where he goes over to Sam's side for some reason, I think his story is one of greed and one of Icarus, you know, flying too close to the sun, right? He's exporting these rocks under the nose of the guy who exports shit and like, or imports shit. And now he's just going to get caught up in it and then it's going to come to light and then he's screwed. I don't think this has a happy ending.
And who knows? Like, I've been cold on some new characters before. I didn't know what to make of Dev, and you know, look what they've done to him with this second season. So maybe they'll turn things around with Sam or Miles. But
the way they introduce Miles that makes me think they're not going to, because he is that guy who gets sucked into an opportunity that he doesn't understand and gets too invested in it, and then gets fucked over by it. So
yeah. Because I mean, even getting this job, he overestimated his education, lied about his resume. Like, he's always kind of been, you know, running a little bit ahead of himself.
Absolutely. And I assume it's all going to come crashing down. Sam returns to quarters and tells Miles that she got her job on the Ranger crew, and that's what she wanted. But she's disturbed by how powerless she feels in this position, or in this operation. And Miles invites her in on the Red Obsidian operation, but she wants to go to the Ranger.
Yeah, I don't. This whole scene, man, I don't know. Like, she comes, like, this line where she's like, you know, I see all of us running. We're all happy. Like, we won the lottery. But we're the real powerless ones up here. And he's like, well, see, that's what I'm saying. You should just start selling rocks like me. I'm like,
Yeah. You should buy into the system more thoroughly, and then you have a chance of becoming the person with the power over the powerless. Is essentially what he's saying, right? Abandon all your ideals and come work on being the powerful within this broken system.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the Italian mafia line, you know, like, stop bowing and scraping before the big shots and just be a big shot yourself. Like, stop working within the system, make your own system.
Sure.
That's the only thing you can trust in. Like I said, I see and broadly agree with the points you're trying to make here. I just think they're articulated in a way that is not the most compelling.
Well, maybe we should talk about the next scene that I know you're going to like a whole lot more, where Ilya's stocking his latest product and he finds it wrapped up in an ad for Mars Jewelry, which makes him realize, or at least suspect very strongly, that Miles is smuggling behind his back.
I really try hard to think about whether something's truly dumb or whether I'm just a little over a storyline and I like my suspension of disbelief is already broken. But like, when he unwraps that bottle and it's a full page ad for Martian Rocks, like, what are the fucking odds?
Such a coincidence.
But, you know, this is all like, you know, Miles probably lives in a town that's adjacent to the rocket industry. And obviously that town is where his wife lives, where the jeweler's at, and the hometown. It's one of the dumber ways to find out Ilya is being betrayed, quote unquote, by Miles. I thought, But
yeah, I think a better way to do this is to find evidence of a secondary smuggling operation going on, and then him having to wonder, is this part of the thing that Miles brought my attention to earlier?
Yeah, I thought he would be like maybe doing a lot, like someone had a last minute order, so he's going to do like one last minute piece of packing in the cargo bay, and he finds a cache of rocks he didn't know about, or he was going to unwrap and there's going to be an envelope of cash that was hidden in something that Miles is supposed to stock,
or even like the weight's off after he takes his own stuff out, right? And something's unexpected about this package. Yeah, not.
But this is literally
it has a
like
picture of.
Like
evidence.
It's almost like a post-it note has on that, like, oh yeah, by the way, Miles is selling moon rocks. Ah.
Yeah. I'm with you. Not my favorite. It wasn't a deal breaker, but we'll revisit that here in a bit. So let's go to Dev in scenes that I think are better here. He drives out to a Kenyan community center to say goodbye to his mother for good, because he's staying on Mars. He's never coming back. He's old man adding it. It's a complicated and emotional goodbye for Dev, and he does not part on good terms with his mother. Which, I don't know. I don't like to see that. Even for a guy that I don't necessarily love, like Dev.
And I don't have enough information to really judge the dynamics here. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not... Like, you know, like, I agree with a lot of what his mom's saying, but I'm also, like, I see... I had this conversation with my dad like 4 years ago. We were talking politics and things were getting heated. I was like, so you're just telling me you raised me wrong, because you raised me to, like, you know, not tell a bunch of lies and to work hard and to, like, you know, have some integrity and honor. But apparently I'm supposed to know that you can just ditch that when the times get tough, or like that, you know, it's like, why did you raise me to believe these things if it's not how the world actually worked, you idiot? And the idea that, like, you raised me to like to be in the world that you want to be in, but you didn't equip me for the world I'm actually in. This Harambe stuff, I tried Harambe, but like, we also know enough about Dev that, did you really try Harambe, or did you try Harambe filtered through your own ambitions? Like, it's all everybody mm-hmm. together and unified. If you're pulling on the rope I want you to pull on, that's I don't know, which I think that's fascinating, because there is a reality in which this mom has tried to sabotage, you know, left dad high and dry for selfish reasons, and, you know, put it on a young kid to abandon, like, you know, yeah, abandon your father, come with me. Or it could be that she tried to escape from a complete megalomaniacal psycho, and, you know, the Dev's caught in his father's cult of personality. I don't know, but like I said, it's really fascinating to see Dev himself try to, like, struggle through these answers. What's your take on it? I'm curious.
So I lean more toward his mother's side here, because I've seen who Dev is, and Dev strikes me, like I said earlier, as that guy with extreme ambition. And I think he gets that from his father. He clearly doesn't get that from his mother, right? His mother is not some high power, you know, business executive or something.
She seems like she's a high up in the community center, and, you know, like.
Which can easily be explained by her Harambe mentality, right? Like, it doesn't I don't ascribe that to ambition, but at least, because that's not how we typically define success in our society. I don't know, you look at it through a different lens and maybe that is ambition, but to me, Dev got that from his father, and I've seen evidence of Dev's ambition all over the place. It's undeniable.
Yeah, for sure,
and it's toxic in a lot of ways, and so when his mother labels it as such, I think I agree with her.
Yeah, and I tend to, like, I see a Kenyan community center where people are working together to do fundraising, and, you know, there's people there forming a community. I tend to think of that as good, you know?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And just trying to pilfer the cosmos for money is bad, but those family dynamics can be complex, and there's something about his mom being very pushy and judgy about her view of the world onto him that made me think that, like, you know, maybe she's right, but she went about trying to impress these values on Dev in the wrong way, mm-hmm. or something.
That could certainly be the case. Yeah.
And I do think that, like, yeah, you can make a mistake by trying to raise your kids too idealistic, and then they get kicked into the teeth by the world. And, like, you got to do a job about trying to, like I said, raise them to be in the world that you want to live in, but also prepare them for how the real world's going to be, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, it is a great scene, and it felt unsatisfying because neither of these people are getting what they want, you know?
And then it all comes back around with the Kelly stuff in mm-hmm. a later scene. And I think, yeah, it worked really well for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these things built beautifully on each other.
So Hobson tries to smooth things over with Irina after the president's comments. She suggests that they negotiate a new agreement over the asteroid hall splits. She wants to host an M7 meeting in Russia to do so, and he agrees to talk to the president about it, reluctantly.
Al Gore refuses to apologize to the Russians, apparently, because the summit is being held in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that's complicated in, you know, doing formal apologies and whatnot, and bring, you know, playing the statesmanship game is complex, but...
Yep. I don't know. He's got an election to win. He can't be seen apologizing to Russians, to admitting to mistakes.
Plus, this whole Nash equilibrium and negotiation, like, it's not just individual games. Like, you know, if you cave in on this round, then it sets expectations and, you know, poor boundaries and whatnot. It's, yeah, I'm honestly glad that none of this is my responsibility. This seems like incredibly stressful.
Yeah, agreed. I wouldn't want to do it. but I'm glad there are people out there who do want to do it.
When she says, "I need an act of contrition to get my guy back to the table," like, Marv's face is priceless.
Yeah. All right, dinner time at Elaida's house. Brant calls her to tell her about the M7 summit, which is happening in Russia. And since Dev is gone, she needs to pack her bags to be Helios's representation there. This is interesting. You've got a conference that's happening in the Soviet Union. You've got a former former NASA director that's happening in the Soviet Union, and you've got her acolyte coming to the Soviet Union. And what are the odds of meeting of Elaida being reunited with Margo here? The quote unquote dead Margo.
Sure, like, if the Bullfinch brings Margo to this conference,
insane, yeah.
Extraordinarily insane.
But that's now, the scenario they're setting up, totally, right?
Maybe the scenario is Margo watching from home and she sees Elaida there at the summit, and that moves the ball. Because, like, but honestly, I don't have any faith that Margo's not going to be at that conference, even though that's the stupidest thing. And, like,
she might be testifying on television in front of a live American audience. I don't know.
Yeah.
With this show sometimes, but.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this Ilya Miles Lee situation is so bonkers that I can't rule it out, and that scares me a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, like, the Bullfinch is a non-serious person if she brings Margo to this international conference with U.S. officials. Like, Margo didn't die 100 years ago, quote-unquote. She died, like, not even 10.
8 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to have to... Yeah, there's no fucking way.
I wouldn't think so. Maybe they'll end up at the same bakery. I don't know. It'll just be a happenstance that she walks down the street to the newsstand or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think they could make it. They could have that be more an accidental disclosure, an unfortunate circumstance.
She figures out, oh, this is Margo's work or something, right?
There's that, or like there's a wrong place, wrong time, or mm-hmm. like a last minute schedule change, or a hotel switch, or I mean, I can think of a lot of ways that you could do that, but I really hope it's just not. They're all going at the conference table, and they look across the table and like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Fancy meeting you here, you know?
Right. We'll see. We'll see. But that's the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh, they're both going to be in the same country. Maybe they'll meet up. Kelly says goodnight to Alex. She's broken up about leaving him, and she watches some of her mother's old video messages. And And I love how they play this, because you think these messages are about her going on a space mission, you know, following her dreams, things like that. But it turns out, no, Karen is telling her she's going to be amazing at being a mother. And boy, in this time and place right now, I don't know whether she needs this encouragement or whether this is twisting the knife. But it seems to inspire her to figure out a solution.
Yeah, it got pretty misty watching the scene.
Yeah, dude.
And what a gift that is, too, that, like, you know, that they've had all this telecommunication over the course of months and years, and you've got something that, you know, like what a shot in the arm to have your mom from beyond the grave tell you how much she believes in you and how strong you are and how you could do anything, but also reminding you of how important your son is, and family and things. It's a real gift, to have something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
And it makes perfect sense that Kelly would, like, as soon as she gets home, find her, you know, just save everything that she's got from her mom, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. Definitely got misty eyed during that scene. It's a great one. Danielle observes Ed trying to see if his hand is shaking. And then she watches a video message from her husband requesting her speech for his son, her stepson's marriage. She records a response, but falters in the middle and stops recording.
Why do you think she faltered?
She's thinking about Ed. She's thinking about Danny. She's thinking about... It was specifically when she mentioned partnerships, I noticed, that she fell apart, and seeing her partnership with Ed fall apart in this episode. I think it's just too much for her in the moment.
Yeah, I've seen the relationship of, like, a CO and an XO be of, like, you know, the ship's dad versus the ship's mom, and, like, you know, that partnership, and that the way you got to trust and support each other and have a unified front, and also the fact that, like, look at all that I've sacrificed, and then look at what Ed has been running from, the same things. And, like, I'm here. Like, I think, yeah, this is such a great constructed scene.
Good point.
To, like, really contrast, put in high relief the differences between Danielle and Ed.
And throwing into high contrast here what the decision that Kelly's trying to make in the moment, right? Having her actively struggling with, am I going to put myself on one of those paths?
Yeah, the way this episode really hits all those and keeps all those balls up in the air, and each one makes the next one, you know, hit that much harder is, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, they bring it to a big crescendo here, which I love. And we'll get to the head of it here in a second.
We'll be back right after this spacewalk. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Strap in, we're diving into more For All Mankind.
We get some more dreams where Danielle's dreaming of the malnourished crew being extremely weak. She's packing up Bad Danny's last meal to take to him, and Ed volunteers to go out there with her. And when they get to Danny's capsule, they find his corpse sitting outside in a spacesuit.
I was hoping for the North Korean pistol. I was hoping for, like I said, opening the sunroof. I was whelmed by him just sitting there dead in a spacesuit. And, and that's the other thing. These goofy-ass spacesuits, man. a little bit of the drama's bled from seeing Ed's head wobbling in this giant blue suit. God
yeah,
damn it.
Chub suits. I don't know, man. I agree. And they weren't ever going to get a huge reaction from me in this scene, because I don't really care about Danny very much.
Are we supposed to understand that they were going to let Danny starve? It's like, well, we're out of food for the convict. So, or was it just kind
of
like we're all starved? Because like that's the next thing is like, how far was supply away? You know, are we like, is this like the Martian? Like, okay, well, the supply ship's coming back in 4 weeks. So we just, you know, one last push of starvation and we'll all be fine. Or are we supposed to understand that, like, was this a little bit heroic that Danny, the bad Danny, could see the writing on the wall and like, I run out of food and I'm depressed and I don't want to do this anymore. And yeah, that'd be the worst. That'd be the most selfish way to heroically kill yourself. Like, okay, I'm going to wait till we get down to one last can of sardines. And like, all right, I see where this is going,
it's
guys.
It's just not responsible of me.
Yeah,
you know?
This last can of, I don't know. But I was trying to think, like, maybe is that what they're going for?
No, I think it became too much for Danny. The shame of it. The shame of all of
like
it.
I said,
not,
he's
not
got
just what he did there, but what he did with Karen, all of it.
You look at Happy Valley, it looks like a depression fort. Like, people can barely stand up. Like, Lee's staggering around. The doctor's giving people, like, fucking fluids to keep them on their feet. Danny's going through all this plus everything else on top. So, like, he's starving and in a glass case of emotions and responsible for the deaths of many
glass
heroic
and titanium
people.
And
I
don't know. I didn't feel like super emotional in this scene, but the thing I was thinking about is, how can Danielle not blame Ed for this? I mean, she didn't
Ed
want him
blame
out
himself
here
for this.
How can Ed not blame himself?
Ed
right?
fought for this to happen, and Danny's prophecy came true, and They both look gutted and haunted by it. But like, I'm really coming to the conclusion that Ed has just not processed this. Ed has just blamed, you know, like shoved aside the blame and thrown himself into the work. And if he ever stopped being the hard charging dude, he might have to think about this for a minute. And then what's going to happen?
Sure. And we've seen a lot of Ed's career, but is this the first time he's made a decision like this that he would have to question, you know, if...
I mean, for pushing Gordo back into the program is another.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, that worked out kind of, you know, all right in the end.
It did. But then it sent, you know, Jimmy and Danny down this other path. So,
true.
Like, there's some fallout from those decisions. And, yeah, I think you're right. Ed's just trying to avoid. He's trying to keep himself cognitively distracted, I guess, to avoid dealing with the consequences of his actions. All right, Kelly goes to Dev to tell him that she wants to bring her son with her to Mars. Given Dev's complicated past with his family, he welcomes it in this scene, which, it's really weird to me how Kelly delivers this speech, because to me it comes across as not a pre-written speech, but a premeditated speech, a speech of like, okay, I'm going into Dev's office, I'm going to say this, 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 and this. And I think that's a fool's errand with a guy like Dev, because you get to the first this and Dev goes, nope, I've got this other plan for you. Here's what we're going to do. And he just totally derails your entire prepared speech. But in this scenario, because he is so distracted by his own personal issues here, it works. She got real lucky with this speech.
And he's genuinely, I thought it was pretty affecting. He's genuinely moved by this mother's love for her son. and like trying to find a way that she can do the stuff for all mankind and also do the stuff for her son.
Well, this is what he wanted from his mom, right? Like you look at what he said to her, like, you left us because you didn't want to deal with the ambition. This is Kelly doing the exact opposite, bringing her son along, you know?
And that's the thing that I don't, that bothers me about Dev's mom is like, okay, please come. Why did you make the children choose between the father? Like, what circumstances led you to that the kids felt like they had to make that choice? Like, you don't want to be the father, fine. But like, what the fuck? The fact that she is, you know, not putting her son in that position and trying to move. Now, I do think that the writers did some heavy lifting by making the son have a medical condition that can magically be improved by Mars. And
yeah, totally.
And you know what? Developing in microgravity, the stresses of the launch, the child, like there, it could be that space adventure is the cause of the genetic problems, or not the genetic, the congenital problems that the kid had. You know, who knows?
Yeah, Alex is just going home. This isn't some dangerous. He's just going home, man.
Yeah. But I do. Yeah, he was the first Martian. I do think it'd be interesting if she was just like, what if she was just risking her son's life and taking him away where he's not going to have any kids his own age to play with? And but they definitely did a lot of heavy lifting with making a more interesting dramatic choice by having him have a condition that could be improved by Mars.
Yeah, for sure.
I do wonder if this is going to be a big Lower Decks kerfluffle, though. Oh, we had to live. No, we couldn't bring our kids along, but I guess the important people can. Yeah, like you know, the important people can bring their kids because you know they're important. Not us.
Yeah, good point.
Extra mouths to feed. Extra. Yeah, it's like I and honestly, they're 100% right.
Uh-huh.
Because Miles couldn't bring his girls and his wife up here.
No way. Not a chance.
But Kelly, she's important.
Uh-huh. Huge double standard. Yep. Looking forward to more attention up there on Happy Valley. That's what we need.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go over to Ilya, trying to confirm his suspicions about Miles' Mars rock smuggling operation. And then he pretty much confirms it. At least Miles is not paying much attention to the money, so he thinks he probably has got something else going on. So they share a toast to success.
I'm an idiot. I thought that I'm actually thinking that Ilya poisoned him.
It was definitely a thought in my mind when I was watching it. Like, is he killing Miles here?
It seems like a wild stretch to be like, oh, he doesn't care about the money? Even though we've been working together like hand in glove for 6 months now, he must be. He's too comfortable with that Martian smuggling. You know, I don't know.
Well, so him saying, aren't you going to count it? And he's like, no, I trust you. That's, to me, that says he has previously been counting it and he has stopped counting it. Which is that because the trust has grown, or is that because he has the Mars rock operation?
I think you're right. Because I was also like, why would he poison him and then like send him off, and you know, was gonna, you know, like, or is it gonna be like that the Putin special where you slowly poison him with polonium, and you know,
not too slowly though, or he builds up a resistance to it, and then you can't poison him with it.
It's a superpower.
Yeah, I mean, jokes on Ilya. He's been poisoning him the entire time, just with booze.
That's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
That's tough. Apparently, it's pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
I do kind of like this ploy, though. It played out pretty well in my mind. Him just, you know, because the way he nonchalantly, I thought it was bonkers the way he just like pulled off half the stack from the table and handed it to him like that's his payment. I mean, it can't be precise unless he's some, I don't know, magician doing card tricks here and he knows exactly how to cut a deck in half every time perfectly, but I don't know. It seemed crazy. And then I realized, oh, no, this is a test to see if he cares at all about this money.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
All right, let's go over to Danielle in this final scene confronting Ed about concealing his medical condition. Wow. Oh, wow. Does he get personal? And then Danielle does the same. She just unloads on him, removes him from command with no regrets.
Yeah, those double fuck yous. Whoo, a long time coming, and honestly, I stood up and clapped. Because this was a heavyweight fight, and they were not leaving any powder in the can.
Thought it would get physical. I was like,
God, if he put
it was
hands
so emotionally violent, I was scared. I was terrified.
And he's old enough. I think Danielle could take him.
Yeah. No, I
one third gravity. It's the great equalizer, babe. No, I did too. And I was like thinking, like, if Ed puts hands on, I'm going to enlist on Mars just so I can go up and kick his ass. Like, I'm taking the next boat out there.
Unforgivable.
Jesus.
He doesn't. He shows some restraint here, but man, this is a knockdown drag out emotionally.
Especially since he's just like reaching for, like, it was like, oh, so you can be on. Danny's like, God, fuck no. I want to be back toasting my son's wedding, you asshole. I don't care about first on this, first on that. Who gives a shit? Like, mm-hmm. I just want what's best for this mission so I can go to fuck home. And then him being like, you know, it's like, and it's the things he said is wild. Like, oh, you want to go off to be with your family? I must make you the real runner. And, you know, and Ed's arrogance, thinking that clipping his wings is the worst that she can do as base commander, or that's the worst that she would, and it, she hasn't really had the balls to do that, right? Or the ovaries, the gonads, whatever.
She does, totally.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a thing. Like, do not mistake Danielle Poole as not having the stuff, man. Steely-eyed missile person as I've ever seen, as I've said before. And man, when she said, I've been putting up with your shit for 30 years, watching you make wrong decision after wrong decision, frequently being the person saying, Ed, you're making a wrong emotional decision, thinking you're God's gift to the cosmos when you're really just a pathetic old man that doesn't know when to call today. Yeah, and Ed, like, every weapon that Ed went to reach for was just unloaded, blunt.
Yeah, because Danielle's in the right of it. I mean, this is all coming from Ed's own feelings of inadequacy, Ed's feelings of shame for the decisions he's made. I mean, all of this stuff that he is trying to distract himself from, it's not working. He's not actually distracting. Mm-hmm. He might mentally be distracting himself, but emotionally, it's all coming out every single second that he's on screen. And it's kind of gross.
Yeah, and man, that line where he's like, don't do anything you're going to regret, and she's like, levels her shoulders, looks at him and says, you know, Ed, I've got a lot of regrets in my life. This ain't going to be one of them. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. And the thing is, okay. So I said that, is it possible that Ed is going to try to use his connections, his NASA connections, his Helios connections, the fact that he's widely seen as a hero? Is he going to try to make trouble for Danielle? Part of me says, yeah, because he's Ed Baldwin and that's just what he's going to do. But man, you look at when Danielle leaves the room and how he kind of like reels and not a complete breakdown, but noticeably slumps and like leans against that bike for support. Like I said, his worst nature might prevail, but I think he knows she's right.
I mean, at the very least, anybody who supports him would have to have him medically examined to see whether or not they should support him. And immediately his story just falls on its face if his hand shakes during a doctor's examination, right? I mean,
what if he shows
no
up with eyes
that, and this is the crux of it? So he's done. Yeah. He's done.
What if he shows up, eyes red as the devil's prick, right hand steady as the Rock of Gibraltar, you know, like that's,
No, his hand's fine. He smokes a lot of weed, but his hand is totally fine.
Yeah, he's got to wait to 8 hours before he goes into space, and then his hands are shaking. But yeah, I think he's, because that's the thing. Like that, he's talking this whole, you know, he's acting like, oh, you're making this bullshit accusation, and the ultimate retort is like, well, then go get checked out by a medical.
Yeah,
they clear you. You know what, Ed? If they clear you, there's no other hand I'd rather have on that stick.
Right.
But
they
he
won't.
Knows it's, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. he knows it, and that's the thing. It's this is, like I said, shame. It's, you know, personal agony that he's not going to get to do the thing he loves anymore because he's too fucking old.
And he's telling on himself because I think by accusing Danielle of making this to be political, like she's just doing this to take him out of the, when he knows it's not true.
Yeah.
He's That's telling himself so that gross. This is what he would do. Like if the shoe was on the other foot. It kills me. Cause like I said, Ed, top three character in the show. He's done a lot of crazy shit, but also he is the guy that, you know, like I'll never forget how I felt last season when I really thought they stacked Ed onto the surface of Mars and he walked away from that. And I'm like, God damn, Ed Baldwin did it again.
But this is it, man. I think this is his Waterloo, right? This is the moment that his career finally comes to an end. There's no way around it.
He's going to have to spend the rest of his time on Elba because Danielle's not taking him back to continental Europe. That's for sure.
Sure. Yeah. Only question I have coming out of this is how many years will it take for them to find Ed on deck level 4? When he's hidden out, refusing to go home. He's living in there like a Morlock or some shit. I don't know.
They're gonna have to send Corporal Hicks with a team full of Colonial Marines with motion trackers. The Baldwin's in. He's in the walls. He's in the walls.
His
he's
blood might literally be acid by then. I don't know, but yeah,
if he keeps on choking on this much bile, that's where he's headed.
Mm-hmm.
So does Ed redeem himself before the end of the season?
That's my actual real only question. Yeah.
Does he redeem himself through his death, or does he go back hand in hand with Kelly? Well, I don't think Kelly's leaving Mars.
She doesn't have a
if
reason to immediately.
If her son's medical condition can be improved on Mars, then why would you leave? So maybe does Ed just retire on Mars and is just Poppy for the rest of us? Because that's a way you could redeem himself.
Possibly.
But I do feel like Ed's going to do it with one last heroic sacrifice.
Man, that feels so Tracy and Gordo to me, though.
He doesn't got it. He doesn't got it no more. That's the other thing. Like, he's not
true.
Gordo had been running. You know, he'd been running a lot. He had been training for that last year. Ed had been doing
half drowning himself in the pool. Yeah.
Ed was doing steroid cycles last year. He's on the devil's lettuce. He's going homeopathic on this shit. I hope he finds another way to redeem himself because, last minute heroics, I'm not even sure if I'd buy it at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'm excited to see what happens, honestly. Ed, you got one last chance. You can't do it through the space program, but maybe with your family, you could have some redemption.
Well, we got feedback. You interested in doing some feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. FAM stands for All Mankind. FAM at baldmove.com is how you give us feedback. Real quick, before we get to feedback, I want to tell people how they can keep up with us. All of our social media is at baldmove, except for TikTok, at baldestmove there. If you want to find out what else we're doing Fargo. The new year is going to be having True Detective. We're in the midst of our Christmas celebrations for our club members. Which, by the way, if you want in on that, if you want some more Christmas in your life, we got, if you think of a classic Christmas movie, 90% sure we've already covered it. It's exclusive, all of our Christmas content exclusive to club members. Support.baldmove.com is how you get more Bald Move in your life, ad free feeds, etc. And I think that's it. We're ready to cover feedback. FAM@baldmove.com. First up is Al Chalant, who says, this whole thing with Danny is getting weird, how they don't even want to speak to the words of what happened to him. Was he the first Martian suicide? Ed was talking a couple episodes ago how they were stranded and waiting on resupply after season 3. Maybe they stopped sending food and water to the Korean capsule Danny was exiled to and he starved. Jim, does Al Chalant, after the revelations of this week, does he get partial internet points? He got the suicide. Seemed like he might even be onto something with starvation, but...
Yeah, if we saw a shot of uneaten meals in his capsule, sure, I'd call that starvation. But to me, he asphyxiated.
Yeah. Bad Danny disappointed us one last time by not doing something spectacular. You know, he just sat out and died.
Like Miles.
Didn't take his helmet off. Didn't swallow a North Korean bullet.
No, chumps, both of them.
Just died of Martian exposure. Charlie's up next says with another partial maybe internet prediction. Thought they hinted this at this episode.
He didn't even die of Martian. He died of exposure to Danny. Right? Like, he's breathing out all of this carbon dioxide and rebreathing it back in. He died of exposure to himself.
True, true. He died at Earth atmosphere contaminated by Danny.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, kind of poetic. Charlie says, I thought they hinted at this in this episode, the first episode, at Danny's daughter's birthday party. I remember good Danny's husband died from suicide, her previous husband, the Marine. I thought Danny's conversation with Danny's wife saying birthdays are the toughest implied a shared experience. Seems like they're implying both experienced a loved one dying by suicide. Just my two cents, but I want to let you see what you guys thought.
You're right.
You know, in retrospect, like, birthdays are the toughest could be, like, I think you could say that after any death, you know, of a family member, that, you know, you're trying to celebrate birthdays, things that they, you know, Christmases, holidays, that stuff can be kind of rough. But, yeah, it seems like she was that was another soft hint that Danny went out by suicide. So, partial internet points for Al, Chalant, and Charlie here. Mr. X from Colorado has an opinion on Lee's wife. He says, my speculative theory is that Lee doesn't actually want his wife or the ashes smuggled up to Mars, but instead wants to get her out of North Korea once she's safe, has plans to defect to the United States to get off Mars to join her. Oh, if only. Oh, if only, Mr. X, because I think I could just believe someone could be smuggled out of North Korea. I know it happened before.
Sure.
Mr. X says, actually, not much in-show evidence of this yet, but certainly defections to North Korea are a common occurrence in our lifetime. And if For All Mankind, timeline relations are a bit more open due to the space program, but still seems like a pretty shitty place to live based on how North Korean compound is being run in Happy Valley. I wonder if this is a way for them to square this circle where they'll meet in the middle. Like, Miles will somehow get her out of North Korea. Lee will somehow pursue a diplomatic solution to get him to defect to the United States, and he gets reunited with his wife that way.
I could see it, especially with Danielle being up there and the commander. She might pull for him, having, you know, experience, gone through starvation mode with him and all that harrowing stuff.
Trade Ed to North Korea for Lee. Straight up. But it's funny, I think that's now the best case scenario, because anything else seems like it's going to be way more stupid. Nicole's up. She says, this week you talked about how Ed was pleading with Danielle not to ship off Svetlana because of his personal feelings for her. While I agree he does have feelings for her, I think he might be more worried about losing her steady hand, and not in a creepy way.
Her stick hand?
he has been, Nicole said it, not me. He has been relying on her to keep his secret and man, or woman as it were, the controls. With her leaving, he'll either have to come clean with Danny or risk causing another accident. You know, the ship has sailed on this metaphorically and literally, but I think Nicole might be onto something. That, yeah, he was attracted to Svetlana and, you know, there's some spark there, but maybe subconsciously or consciously he was trying to keep her a little closer to the inner circle, give her a little bit more reason to look the other way.
Yeah, they didn't tell that story, but I could absolutely see that being a motivation. Like, having your co-pilot in on, like, knowing that at any moment he might need to hand this off to me and I might need to take over, but I am keeping his secret. That's valuable to him, I would think.
Yeah, and he could pull the, could a disabled old man do this in the bedroom, you know, to kind of keep her.
Jesus. Let's see you
not
do that.
Complaining about my not complaining about my rapidly shaking hand now, are you?
Jesus.
Not a matter of crew safety now, is it? Okay. All right. Nicole, this is your fault. We were flying straight as arrows until you came along. Fred King is up, said, I think the issue of the clamps is essential to explain what happened to Svetlana. She is testing them when she gets into a fight on the surface. He's trying to prevent her from finding out that they are as faulty as Margot discovers. Whoa, look at the big brain on Fred here. I rewatched that scene and it's hard to argue against that maybe he was trying, you know, that they were doing the testing and someone at Roscosmos knew that those pins were faulty and he was trying to start beef to keep that from being discovered, or...
Wow. Maybe.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know that... I wish if they had a flourish like that, they could have figured out a way to kind of, you know, spin it around and show it off for us, but you might be onto something there, Fred. Dr. Barry from Madrigal Electromotive is back. He said wants to make a comparison to Foundation. He says, catching up with Foundation, and I noticed Day's teaching to Dawn in regards cooking the peacock from the premiere episode of Foundation. Day says, the cooks inject it under the skin with a needle right before roasting. Do you know why they use a needle? Dawn speculates because it's more efficient, and Day said because they're afraid if they use a knife, as is the time-honored way, they might rip the skin and I'll send them to a stew pot 50 levels down. All of which is a problem. Why? Because when people are afraid to do their job right, they're certain to do it wrong. And that's poor stewardship. This leads Dr. Barry to speculate that the Russians will dig a hole deeper to avoid getting caught in a mistake rather than admit the mistake because of the greater fear of punishment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's see also the miniseries Chernobyl on Max HBO, mm-hmm. because that's a whole meditation on what happens to society when they get a loose coupling with the truth. I wonder what they're trying to do with the Russia thing, because it feels like the only consequence of the Russian Revolution is to install Margo as Supreme Commander of Roscosmos.
Mm-hmm.
That's my I was hoping that they'd do a little bit more, but there's still plenty of season left.
Yeah, we got another 4 episodes. I think that's time to cause some political drama.
Yeah,
and it's not been not happening. I guess it just hasn't been as dramatic as I've expected.
Granted,
because Irina pushing back on Eli all the time has been constant and infuriating for him. But we'll see if it comes more to a head later.
Craig T says, it's interesting to me how we differ in what parts of the story we find difficulties in. For me, I find the whole fighting outside on Mars in a spacesuit a little ridiculous because it's so obvious you have to be so careful what you do in an environment that's looking to kill you at any chance it gets. Yeah, but people have short fuses, you know? Like, that's like when you red out, You don't think about, oh God, I mean, that's how the majority of assaults happens, you know, fighting words, that whole concept.
Sure.
But Craig says, in a colony of hundreds, I don't think it's unrealistic that you could go outside in a borrowed suit and even use a vehicle because it's not a military base or even run by one organization. There's 7 different countries up there, and not to mention Helios using different equipment at different times doing different things. Think of it as if you're a small factory. Everyone pretty much knows not only your work habits, but your personal ones too. Yet in a big multi-building factory with a turnover of employees, who knows and what they do. You would have things like forklifts all over, and who's to say if someone's using one when they're not supposed to? I don't buy that the Mars base is closer to a big multi-building factory with turnover than it is a small town where everybody knows everybody else's business.
Yeah, might have to agree to disagree on this one, because I just think, I mean, the protocols here would be tight. They have
even
to
tight
be
the
to
more fingers
lives.
The more fingers they're putting the pie, the more chefs in the kitchen, the more I think check in and check out sheets are super vital. And especially
I think
for
if it
like,
is a military operation, not a not a private corporation,
and we know it's both, because we've definitely seen they've thrown that up in relief the last few episodes, that it is both a military command top-down structure, it's also very corporate, and but like, you know, I think that it, like, if it was forklifts, if Miles had requisitioned a forklift or a blowtorch or something, it's a little different than like a Mars buggy, because I don't think they have that many. Like, I'd be surprised if they have 10, 12 of them. And So, like I said, agree to disagree, because, like, you know, I can see how you could carve out that space for the show. That's going to do it for feedback. Once again, if you want to send us feedback, fam@baldmove.com is how you do it. Otherwise, that's going to do it for this episode of For All Mankind. Can't wait to see where Ed lands on the hero versus villainy scale. Maybe we'll find out next week. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.